Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
The only thing that we really know now is that the uncertainty is going to rule the day. And this is a draft, and why the books want no part of the draft is because they can't get a consensus, because everything is different to everybody. And so there's no advantage to the book. There's nothing they can hang their hat on.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Here we go, everybody. We're 2 weeks out from the 2024 NFL Draft. It's a fresh episode of the GM Shuffle. Michael Lombardi is here. I'm Ben Wilson. I'm in for Femi, and we do have to give a shout-out to our guy Femi because he is now a married man, Michael, and hopefully on a beach somewhere, drinking a cold one and not tweeting about the Dallas Cowboys, at least for the next, like, week plus.
Yeah.
But we miss Femi, and congratulations from his big day over the weekend. Saw some of those pictures and videos. Looked like just an amazing time.
Yeah, no, there's nothing better than Twitter Femi. I mean, it's the best. Although I'm recording this from home because after I came back from vacation, my wife went to see her grandchildren out in Las Vegas again. And so now I'm stuck here at home, and Bella's going to continue to bark in the background because she wants to be heard.
Yeah,
but I feel good about going on vacation. It was fun, Ben. I went to Exuma with the great Bill Berman. His wife, Nisa, celebrated her birthday. I won't tell what year. And it was fun. You know, we had a good time. A lot of information came across. You had time to sit there and talk on the phone to people around the league, because as you're kind of now is the time in the league where, you know, the boards are fairly set. You know, you're kind of tinkering around. Everybody's working more on their horizontal board than they are on their vertical board. Horizontal board is, would we take the corner over the right guard, even though they have the same grade? Would we take the right guard over the free safety, same grade? Those are the things that are kind of being worked on today in terms of the horizontal board with the decision makers. And everything else pretty much is still in place. So there's a lot of kind of conversation going on behind the scenes. So it's a good time of the year. We have the Masters this weekend, which I'm sure you place bets for.
I love to watch
that. The great Jim Nantz, get to listen to his commentary. I love Wright Thompson's opening, and I hope they do that as well, because nobody writes better than Wright.
I got the green shirt on in honor of that, even though I don't have a true, you know, blazer or anything like that. But yes, it is a big week here, and I think the kind of the main storyline, at least for the draft being 2 weeks out, is just the lack of major things we actually know right now. And there's this irony here when it comes to the betting, where I think a lot of us are betting the Masters right now because NFL draft isn't really a big option for a lot of us, depending on where you live. I mean, it was always one of those things where bettors just killed the draft for at least the first 3-4 years that it was a legalized thing to bet on. So what did a lot of books do last year? Well, they said, you know what, guys, party's over. We're not letting you bet basically anything. And if we are, we're putting it up for maybe a 24-hour window, very low limits. Have at it, have fun. And the ultimate irony of that was last year was really our first misinformation draft in the modern betting era, where so many people got it wrong. There was so many bettors that lost big time money, and had the books actually, I had the stones to actually offer a real menu and offer real limits, they would have made a killing last year. Instead, they didn't, and I find it very interesting that books are kind of going back to the same strategy again this year. Now, that's not to say every book in every jurisdiction is doing this, but at least, you know, here in Vegas and Nevada, super limited as to what you can actually bet.
Yeah.
Which is funny to me because, I don't know, what do you think's like the biggest guarantee right now, if anything, if someone were to go to you and say, hey, Michael, like what's like the one lock you would say at this point of the draft?
I think it's Caleb Williams number one. That's it. You know, everybody kind of knows that. I think everybody who's been around Eberflus and polls at these workouts. Now, look, you know, Caleb Williams on the field is dynamic. I think the concerns you have is his relationship with his teammates, his relationship with being the leader, the face of the franchise, all those things, I think, to me, can be worked out. But I wouldn't say this is an easy one to do. He's a different type of kid. That doesn't mean he's a bad kid. It just means he's kind of different in how he relates to his teammates. You talk to the Oklahoma people, you talk to the USC people. I think clearly he is the best quarterback in the draft. I don't think that's close. So he is the number one. But after that, the only thing that we really know now is that the uncertainty is going to rule the day. See, here's where I get into real issues, you know, and I'm as guilty as anybody because of my vision of what I see in the draft. But this is truly a draft where, Ben, you could have 50 players and I could have 50 players, and they would not be they would be the top 50 different on your board and they would be on my board. So if somebody takes JJ McCarthy at 3, like, I know it upset the mock drafters, but really you have to keep this in perspective because that's the mock drafter's opinion. That's not a consensus opinion. And this is a draft, and why the books want no part of the draft is because they can't get a consensus because everything is different to everybody. And so there's no advantage to the book. There's nothing they can hang their hat on, right? You could say, okay, CJ Stroud's better than Bryce Young, but we're not, but that's what we think. You know, the Carolina Panthers thought Bryce Young was better than CJ Stroud. That's the hard thing to do. Does it make Carolina wrong and everybody else right? We have time to determine that. So the one thing I think about this draft is wherever they go, I don't want to hear anybody complaining. If Neighbors goes ahead of Harrison, which a lot of people have in their boards that way, and it's not like it's significantly that way, then, you know, don't complain about it. Just because you see Harrison that way doesn't mean you're right and they're wrong.
It's always the best draft betting advice we could give is ignore your own opinion. I mean, look at the actual info that's out there, and that's the thing right now. We don't know what info is actually real. And I think a lot of that just goes into the fact, Michael, that let's go after picks 1 and 2. I mean, it kind of feels like New England is that in that crux sort of position of 3 where what do? There's been so much talk about for a team in a rebuild, and Gerard Mayo had the comments a couple weeks ago to Mike Rice, the beat reporter, saying, you know, look, patience is going to be the key word. We are a ways away here. And he basically immediately threw off any comp to what Houston did last year, saying, look, Nick Caserio had been building that roster for 2+ years when they got Stroud. This is not like that. And there's been some talk of, okay, does New England trade down, try to get more assets? Arizona certainly seems to be in a position where, with the right offer, they could trade down at 4. With Jim Harbaugh, number 5, with the Chargers, they could also be in a position to potentially trade down with the right offer. Which teams do you see actually being realistic to move up, whether that's 3, 4, 5, and actually having a package that would realistically get that done and move themselves into the top 5 as it stands right now?
Well, I wrote about this week. When I was on vacation in Exuma, watching Bill Berman deal with the sharks out in the ocean there, I talked to a lot of people, and the consensus that I got in the Giants, the people that I talked to, the Giants really like Drake May. And it makes sense. And I wrote a column on VSiN about it, basically that, you know, Daybald and Sheehan both had come from Buffalo, both fell in love with Josh Allen, even though Allen had things that were probably concerning, his accuracy being number one, but he was so big and he was so fast that they saw the potential and they developed him. I think that's if you're going to take May that high, you have to be in that. And I think that if you're them, you have to decide, can we wait at 6 to get May or do we have to go to 3 to get him? I don't know why everybody thinks New England is trading down. They have 2 quarterbacks on their team, right? 3 quarterbacks, okay? And so the reality of that is, you know, Brissett's going to be the starter, but who is going to be their guy? If they trade down, are they trading down to get McCarthy? Are they trading down to get May? Are they trading down to get Penix? I think all those things become a little iffy, and you've got to be really sure about where you're trading down to get that player, right? If you want to come away with a quarterback, you have to be willing to trade down to a spot where you think you can get the guy you really want. And I'm not sure you could say that in this draft because everybody's quarterback draft rankings from a vertical standpoint are going to be completely different. Everybody's, you know, I think everybody has Caleb 1. I think the second best player for me is Jaden Daniels. Some people might think it's McCarthy. Some people might think the potential of May raises above that. Some people might think that, you know, Michael Penix is probably the best passer in this draft. So there's all variances that goes through this. But I thought John Mara's comments, which is what I wrote about in the column, were interesting because Mara basically said that, you know, I'm not against trading up. I'll read you the direct quote. He said, look, if they fall in love with a quarterback and believe that it's worth the number 6 pick or moving up, I would certainly support that, Mara said. Like, so what I said, basically, they are like the Daybald and Sheen are like 2 school teenagers looking for love. I mean, they're making dates filled with high hopes. I mean, they've worked out everybody. They've been with everybody. And I think ultimately what they want to be able to do is convince Mara they fell in love to get the I do from Mara, which is, there's nothing wrong with it. I think to me, the reality of it is I know they signed Drew Locke as the backup, but why would they have brought Russell Wilson if they don't see the need to make this decision? So I think that's kind of what the intrigue in the draft is. What will the Giants do? What will the Raiders do? Right? What's Minnesota going to do? Is Minnesota going to sit there and wait for next year and get two more good players on the team? We shall see.
Minnesota at 11, Las Vegas at 13. I think so much of what you say is, it's funny, it is reflected in the odds in a certain sense, but we've also come to learn that draft odds specifically are the ones that have the most variance. It can move the quickest. So Jaden Daniels now up to minus 165 to go second overall. May is favored to go third. McCarthy shortly behind him. But it was, a month ago that if you talked to most people, they would have said, okay, yeah, it's May 2, and the odds said he was a healthy favorite to go second at all. Do you see that debate? I mean, not to say it's over, but because we've kind of started this episode saying there's really no sure thing, but how much of that back and forth do you expect to happen over the next 2 weeks between the Daniels and May thing, or is it more of a Daniels probably feel pretty good about 2 for Washington, and then it's a question of just how high of a riser is McCarthy actually going to be as that fourth quarterback?
Well, I think it's hard to predict what Washington will do because you got Cliff Kingsbury in there. You've got Dan Quinn. If you just look at their free agency, Dan Quinn has huge effect on personnel, even though Adam Peters is the general manager and he's got complete control. You can see Quinn's influence in every player that they've signed. So who does Peters like at quarterback? He loved Trey Lance when he was with the 49ers. Does that mean he would love somebody in this draft? Is it May that has that potential to really rise? I don't know. You know, I think that remains. I'm not sure Washington really knows yet. You know, the owner's involved. Everybody's kind of involved there. So I do think on tape, though, Ben, it's not – I think Jaden Daniels is the second-best quarterback. I think May has what I call that potential. And what I wrote about the potential is really it gets down to, it creates kind of an illusion, right? Potential can be good and bad, you know. It's like the great it's like Stairway to Heaven. You know, they said some words have two meanings. Well, potential has two meanings, right? And one can be good and one can be bad. And I think ultimately you fall into that trap of potential. But you got to have a plan on how you're going to get it out of them. Look, when Brett Favre went in the second round, everybody knew he had ability. There were some concerns, but he had the potential. That worked. Josh Rosen, everybody thought he had potential. That didn't work. So that's going to be the interesting line here. But when you look at May, and we'll figure this out after the break, when you study May, there's as much wrong with the North Carolina offense as there is with his inability to make all the plays.
No question. Still so much to be decided on that front. We'll continue the draft talk up next. We also have some headlines to discuss as well. A game in Brazil has been set. There's some legal issues around the league. We'll talk about it all on the other side of this edition of the GM Shuffle.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Continuing the quarterback talk at the top of the NFL draft, I'm Ben Wilson again in for Femi Abebefe. Michael, we talked Drake May in North Carolina. He's the favorite right now to go third overall at minus 130, but in draft betting, that's a very tepid favorite hold. That could certainly fall. It could also rise, depending on what people actually view him as. And it's such an interesting case study in a prospect because of the way his offense was set up at North Carolina. I know it's something you've dove into a lot, but we didn't see May at the Senior Bowl. Didn't see him kind of independently showing off some of the skill set he has. So when you've kind of done the breakdown in the X's and O's, what do you see in May, and what do you think the scouts and the GMs are looking at on him right now?
Well, I mean, the hardest thing to do about quarterback is to understand what he's being asked to do. And because you're not in the staff meetings, because you're not in the installation, because you don't understand the whole offense, you just grade the production. You know, sometimes when he takes a drop, you know, he's going to throw a 12, you know, he's dropping as if he's going to throw a 12 yard out and the receiver runs an 18 yard out. You know, so he's holding the ball. Is that on him? Is that on the receiver? Is that on the scheme? See, it really becomes a little bit of, you got to really break it down, understand the scheme, the protection. You know, he gets an overload pressure, you know, but it's his fault to not reroute the protection. Can they block it or can't they? You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. And again, I'm not making excuses for May, but to me, when you watched Herbert, you had a lot of those same feelings. But then when he went to the Senior Bowl, he got pro coached. You could see, okay, I got this. All right, boom, I'm banging it here. Okay, I got that. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And it became a lot cleaner for the evaluators. And this one isn't. You know, you watch him as a freshman, redshirt freshman, really good. You watch him last year, not so good. I mean, you really, to me, I think the most important thing about this draft is not who do we pick, but how are we going to develop the player? Because let's be clear here, you know, all these guys are not going to carry a team. And we know if five go in the first round, maybe six, that four of them are going to be bust. And they're going to be bust because of their draft status. They're going to be bust because of the expectations that are put on them to be the answer, when some of them have to be within the framework of the scheme. So if you draft J.J. McCarthy, you're going to get a guy who makes really good decisions on third down, was very good, played well in big games. I know he threw two interceptions against TCU in that game. But he, on the most part, his third down tape is really good. He's got good feet. You could see all the West Coast teams really liking him. He's a good kid. You know, he's kind of has gone through some things at Michigan, and he's handled it well. And you got to believe this, you know, the glass is half full there. But then you've got to say, okay, here's what we're going to do with him. Like, to me, if Sean McVay took Michael Penix, right, knowing that Sean wants to throw over routes, hit the ball in the third level, he would have to give up something on third down. But to me, Penix is the best thrower of the football on the third level other than Caleb Williams. And he can make explosive plays. Now, the problem you get with Penix is, you know, he runs 4.6, but you don't see 4.6 on tape. You don't see him make plays like a 4.6 quarterback. You don't see him extend plays like Jaden Daniels. But he's got a really good ability to be accurate up the field. And, you know, look, that's something that Trevor Lawrence can't do. That's something that Daniel Jones can't do. And that's something that Kyler Murray hasn't been able to do. Throw the ball up the field and average over 7.5 yards per completion.
Yep.
You know, per attempt. So that, to me, is why this is so hard. It's how are we going to build the quarterback around what we do is the fundamental question. And when you look at the Eagles, right, all the concerns about Hurts, no anticipation on throws, wasn't a natural thrower, more of a runner than a thrower. They did that. They solved that equation, right? They solved it, and they had a plan for it, and then the kid got better within the plan. He accepted coaching. See, here's the other thing. Which of these six are going to embrace coaching? This is where May keeps moving up, because May's going to embrace it. May wants to get better. I'm not saying Caleb doesn't, but I think Caleb's going to have to really buy into the coach who's coaching him for him to constantly get better, like Kyler Murray would have to, like any other quarterback would. So that's to me is the ointment. That's really where you get into some trouble.
It's what made the Houston thing so special last year, because, you know, Nick Caserio, it's not like the cupboard was actually bare. As much as we talk about, okay, C.J. Stroud is just the difference maker, like it kind of became belatedly known right after the fact, but what he set up Stroud to do was pretty incredible in his, you know, for Stroud year one. It was year three for Caserio, and at least the, you know, the pieces he was able to put in place. I think it's kind of like figuring out, is there a team out there that maybe has these hidden building blocks in place, whether it's in the trenches or yeah, some of the skill position players we just don't know about yet that can come out of nowhere, because that's what we always wonder, right? It's like, who can go worst to first? And as much as it's the narrative is, okay, it's that quarterback who can do it, it's also, all right, what pieces are around him? And I just wonder, is there a Houston of 2024 that is kind of just sitting there down in kind of the situation where nobody really expects anything out of him? They don't see the skill position players being all that great, and yet they've got people around a potential, you know, franchise quarterback who they're going to draft who can actually make a difference. I don't know if there's an answer to that. That's what I'm trying to figure out, at least right now.
Well, I think, you know, Chicago would fit that description, right? I mean, they have the first pick overall in the draft. They played better defense when they were healthy last year. So you got to believe that they're going to be able to make that jump. I think New England could be that team too, because, you know, look at New England, Ben. I mean, you know, they brought a lot of the guys that were on the team back. They had horrible quarterbacking play last year, horrible from both quarterbacks, right? The offensive line was not very good. They have some players. They need a right. They need a left tackle. If you know, they're going to need a left tackle for certain, but they have some ability, and they have a defense that can keep them in games. They had no kicker, which killed them. So they could be a team that could move there. If they get any kind of quarterbacking play, they could do it. And it's the same thing. And when we say any quarterbacking play, we mean a quarterback who's going to come in and make the players around them better. I think that's the other thing. What we don't talk enough about is, you know, who great quarterbacks make the players around them better. Everybody keeps saying, well, he doesn't have enough skill around him. Well, okay. You know, all of a sudden, you know, Brady's won Super Bowl without a lot of great skill around him. The quarterback drives the skill. Now, I'm not saying you can have slow receivers, but he makes everybody better, just like the point guard in basketball makes everybody better. So for me, I think that's it. And what quarterback can make everybody better? I don't think May is going to come in as a rookie and make everybody better. I think May in his second year might be able to do that. I think Penix could do that on the deep throws. I think there's going to be some inconsistencies within his game. You know, I think certainly Daniels could make him better. If he can hold up and play big, I think there's no question about that. He could make team players better. But look, you could say the other thing. Daniels is playing on a pro team.
He was. And that's where now you look at, okay, that we're seeing the steam up to the second pick now. And you look at the upside and you talk about the ceiling for a guy like him and the athleticism. And you can see why that is a thing. Penix, by the way, plus 105 to go first round. Do you see him being a first round guy, Penix? It's pretty much right on the edge right now.
I do. I think to me, there's a lot to like about Penix. He's got, you know, the board coached him really well. We saw him have success at Indiana. He's got great ability to throw the ball down the field, which is something you have to have. I mean, you're not going to be able to throw, like, why is Daniel Jones? Why is Kyler Murray? Why are those guys not kind of taking that final step? I know Murray got paid. I know Jones got paid. Trevor Lawrence has never averaged over 7 yards per attempt in his career. If you don't make explosive plays down the field, you can't make it. You know, you're going to have to make chunks. And you say, well, you need better skill. Well, when you're as accurate as Penix is on the third level, that gives you an opportunity. You know, look at Jacksonville, the money they put in their skill players, whether it's, yeah, of course, that you could say they overpaid for Kirk. They paid Ingram. They paid Ridley. They traded for Ridley. You know, they've done a lot. This year they signed Gabe Davis, you know, Duvernay. But the reality of it is they haven't been able to work the ball down the field. And until you can do that, you really aren't going to make any hay. And I think that's ultimately what Penix can do well. That's why I think Penix has got value. Look, if Will Levis is at the top of the second, I think Penix is better than Will Levis. There's no question in my mind. His college tape is better, right? You know, I Bo Nix throws a lot of bubbles. He throws a lot of sideways. But Bo Nix has got some things that you like in terms of athleticism, leadership. You know, I think his college tape was better than Will Levis, too.
Right now, I mean, we're seeing a lot of movement to the over on that, the 4.5 quarterbacks. Penix would obviously be a part of that. It's minus 210 to the over 4.5. We figure 4 will go in the top 10, and then it's a big question of who would be the fifth guy. Penix, a big move up the draft board right now. We'll talk more draft, obviously, later, and as we continue here throughout this process, we are 2 weeks out, Michael. The one that headline I wanted to make sure we get to on this episode, I mean, the Rasheed Rice stuff in KC, it seems like it's going from bad to worse here. The arrest warrant issued on Wednesday by the Dallas Police Department, and it's facing 8 counts here. It's aggravated assault. 6 counts of collision involving injury, also collision involving serious bodily injury from the chain reaction crash with the Lamborghini that he was driving. I mean, how, like, what are you hearing from around the league? Like, how bad is this going to be here for Rice? And obviously, as an extension now, it relates to, okay, what's this KC wide receiver unit going to look like?
Well, you know, they signed Hollywood Brown. They got him cap room because, remember, they got all that cap back from Snead. You know, I'm surprised they're not in the Beckham thing. I mean, Miami's trying to get Beckham all over. Hey, I thought maybe they would jump back in that. There were talk about them going there last year. But the Rice thing, to me, is going to go right into the commissioner's court. And, you know, you've got to wonder what would promote or what would make a young man leave that scene, right? You would have to say something that, you know, did he want to avoid something else that could have been? I don't know. I'm not there. But this is going to come down to the commissioner. And the commissioner is going to have to come, you know, he's going to have to come heavy on this, because I think ultimately, you know, it's, he's got to show and demonstrate that there is this policy in place. And the Chiefs are going to have to work around it. And there's enough time to do that, whether they draft a guy in the first round, second round, third round. There's no one else to sign out there. Even if they sign Beckham, would that really make a big difference to their team? You know, so, I mean, this is going to be one of those things that certainly comes down to it.
And you also add in, I mean, we're going to be in, what, age 36 season for Travis Kelce. I think he'll turn 36 about week five, week six or so. And so that, I mean, that's, I think, Mike, will be a big storyline as we get into the summer, right? We have all, we have so much time to fill and figure out, okay, who's going to take a leap, who will step back in 2024. I mean, Kelce, you know, for as great as he had the second wind in the postseason, now you just wonder, like, how long can he keep doing this? He's older than Gronk was when Gronk was well past his prime and retired.
Yeah, I think this, too, about Kelce and about the Chiefs is, where is their offensive line? You know, where is their offensive line? We don't know where that is. I mean, they didn't sign Donovan Smith back, right? And so who's going to play left tackle? Who's going to handle that role? And then, you know, they've changed their offense. I agree with you. Kelce wasn't the same player once he got hurt last year. It's going to be hard to think he can do that. So there's a lot of question marks about where they can go. Did they replace Snead in their secondary? He was a huge help for them in terms of covering man-to-man.
Odds of the first player drafted, Chiefs are now minus 110 to take a wide receiver, plus 145 to take an offensive lineman. Some movement, as you would expect, toward the wide receivers. That does it for us on our DraftKings Network content, though. On the podcast side, stick around. We'll wrap up this edition of the GM Shuffle next. We're back for the final time, 2 weeks until the 2024 NFL Draft. Some headlines, some contract stuff to get into, Michael. I've been a blast being back with you here on the GM Shuffle. I believe my second ever episode of the GM Shuffle, I believe.
Appreciate you filling in for our man, Femi, who's relaxed. Let me ask you a question. You know, we are in the next 2 weeks are full mock draft. We get, you know, version 4.0, version 7.3. We get all these different versions. Who's your go-to mocker?
I've learned I don't trust one guy. I go, like, there's the mock draft report site, like the database where it lists everybody. And I, to be honest, like, I'm looking at basically like an average of about 20. Cause like, you're going to have guys who I feel like kind of, especially in a year like this, right, where there's so much uncertainty, just sort of go off the rails to try to get a headline, right? Like this guy just projects some totally, you know, some random guy to go to, you know, that's not even, like, I guess the equivalent with that, if somebody was like, oh yeah, JJ McCarthy to go to, and or like a Malik Nabers, you know, something just out there. So I try to look more at the consensus. I've never been someone that's like, all right, Mel Kiper, whatever he says, okay, I'm just going to bet it blindly. Like, I just don't think he can really do that, because these guys have hits and they also have misses. That's sort of my take, as much as that's maybe not saying, okay, here's one guy you should just blindly trust and bet. I just don't think he can do it.
Yeah, and I think, to me, you're right. You can't. But what you can do if you're an executive in the league is because if you do go to that mock draft database, is where they have them all, you can write, you can have your people write up a program to where you dump all the draft convictions into one thing and come out with a consensus of where you think the player's going to go, which is really helpful in terms of, for executives around the league, to be able to say, okay, you know, here are the top 100 players according to 17 or 25 mock drafts, right?
Yeah.
And so now you could sit there and kind of have an idea about, okay, you know, this, we have this guy here, but, you know, he might go there. just kind of gets you a range of it. But the one where you get real trouble is when you really like a player and he's not in the first four rounds, let's say. And sure. That's because nobody's given his name out. And so you just can't assume you're going to get this player later in the draft because there's teams that are too sharp that know it. There's really no secret. So, yeah, I think there's value in that. I don't think there's value in being accurate with the prediction. I think it's way too hard and too many people lie. I really do.
And what I would say, too, so, yeah, there's the mock NFL mock draft database.com. I was just making sure I had the right website on that. What I also do, let's say, like, I'm looking to make a bet on a certain guy, and I'm, you know, I'm wanting to just make sure, like, I want to look at several guys at least outside of just the database and see, okay, are they kind of in lockstep with what I'm thinking here before I pull the trigger, say, in a bet? If you go to the huddlereport.com, that's what they actually compile the score. So they make out of 100, a score over 5 years, which is a pretty good sample size, based on the number of top 100 prospects that they've got in the first, you know, 100 picks of the draft here. So that goes deeper down than just the first round, right? But you can go into this and you can look, I mean, last 5 years, like, there's really good data on this as a result. Like, so some of the big names, I mean, Todd McShay is sixth on that list over the last 5 years from ESPN. Lance Zierlein, NFL.com's ninth. So there are some respected guys on there, but I find that really interesting too. If I'm kind of, you know, trying to parse together a bet, say, Michael, and I'm like, all right, I want to see a few guys that are on the top of this list and what they've got. I'll just literally pull this up, pull up their mocks, compare side by side. And if I'm hitting it a pretty good clip on that, that's kind of the final point. I'm like, all right, ready to pull the trigger. Let's go. That's just a little piece of advice I would give the Huddle Report. That's a not as often used draft resource, at least for bettors out there.
Yeah, and I think to me that, remember, we're in the information business, mm-hmm. and in any draft, nobody has the answers. Nobody has the crystal ball in any draft, right? So we know that. And so everybody has different opinions on different players. And that doesn't mean I'm right, you're wrong. That doesn't mean she's right, he's right. It's all different. And so what you're trying to do is kind of figure out. But what you can't do is use the wisdom of the crowds. You can't use this collective kind of sense of, okay, this is what it is. You can use it in terms of a range of where a player may go in the draft. But in terms of the evaluation, you know, you really can't, you can't do that. And because of that, I think you have to be really careful. And one of the things that was funny when I was away on vacation, I was, you know, the thing that struck me a little bit on vacation was the fact that in college football this year and college basketball this year, both men and women, right? Teams that had great teams that won all looked the same. They were different styles, different play, different coaches from different backgrounds, but they all had accountability. They all had hard work, mental toughness. They all had everything that you have to be a champion. And, you know, one of the things that I think what we have to do is when I was away on vacation, read a book about Teddy Roosevelt. He had a great quote in there that I think is really, it's kind of almost perfect for the NFL mock draft. He said about his relationship with the presidency. He said, "I do not represent public opinion. I represent the public. There's a wide difference between the two, between the real interest of the public and the public's opinion of those interests. I must represent not the excited opinion of the West, but of the real interest of the whole people." And to me, that quote applies. That quote is a job description for somebody making draft picks.
No question. That's a great way to phrase it as well. And I'm curious to see, you know, because, yeah, like you say, we're a lot of these guys, it's mocked like 7.3 or whatever. But usually the ones in the last week are where you really kind of feel like, okay, this is where they're just not throwing stuff against the wall. This is stuff that feels like there's more conviction behind it, at least. That's always been my thought as we get closer here. So we'll be keeping an eye on all that. Want to get just some rapid-fire thoughts from you, though, Michael. Some extensions that have been handed out since our last episode here. Rapid fire thought, like in a, you know, like a 30 seconds each year. And do any of these actually move the needle for you? Let's go Patriots.
Well,
their most versatile defensive player, Kyle Duggar, 4-year deal worth up to $66 million. Is that a deal, a needle mover for you on Duggar?
Well, I think it's another player that they've re-signed to their team, right? You know, I mean, when you break down their team and you look at, you know, who they brought back, Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, you know, Kyle Duggar, Josh Uche, you know, Jennings, Rieger, you know, Michael Iwanu. They've kind of signed back a lot of their players, right? You know, and they've added some players to it, whether it's Gibson, Brissett, you know, KJ Osborne, all those. But I think it does help them. And, you know, I mean, he kind of gives them some continuity on defense. because I think that's really important. You need that so badly on defense. You need to have that continuity. And if you're going to continue on, and if they're going to take that step with a quarterback, right, Ben? I mean, if they're going to be that team, then they have to have continuity.
As you have said, it was not an offensive issue for New England last year. I mean, finished top five in a lot of defensive ratings, so it would make sense that they'd bring back, especially a guy like Duggar, who can play multiple positions as well here for 2024. How about the Jags sticking AFC? Josh Allen, the pass rusher, Josh Allen, 5-year, $150 million deal.
Well, look, everybody wants a pass rusher. They're hard to get. When you get one you like, I think certainly that makes a huge difference for your team. Now he's got Armstead playing next to him. If he can stay healthy, it gives him another inside guy to go with, along with Robinson in there. So yeah, I think that's, you know, look, one of the things you want to do when you're building a team is you want to get the quarterback and you want to get somebody to rush the quarterback in the fourth quarter. And obviously Jacksonville has I think it's a huge year for Jacksonville. Huge year for Jacksonville.
No question. Especially with the Lawrence piece of that too on the other side of the ball. How about Derek Brown, 4-year, $96 million extension for the Panthers, like really the lone bright spot that Carolina had a season ago.
Well, I think this, Ben, anytime you can get a three technique that can play the run and rush, you got to take them. They're hard to find. That's why the Raiders paid Christian Wilkins all that money. That's why, to me, it's, you know, I don't know why Miami wouldn't have re-signed, you know, Wilkins. They should have. To me, he was a big part of their defense. They're trying to replace him. You know, but they, Miami gets eyes on skill players as opposed to what really wins the game. I think this is a good signing for Carolina. They had to do it. Look, it just proves the point. When you turn out a three technique like the Raiders did last year to take, and now they hope they can get a rusher on the edge, that's great. Kuntz ended up playing really well. But if they would have had, you know, if they would have had Carter inside, I think all of them would have played better. Now they signed Wilkins, you know. So I think anytime you get a three technique, you better take them. They're a rare breed, three techniques. Rare.
No doubt.
They're as rare as quarterbacks.
What's also rare is having an O-line that is staying put and is a unit that is not only experienced but also really, really solid and avoids injuries. And that's where, you know, Philadelphia's had such a luxury there the last couple of years. But now you have some transition here with the Jason Kelce retirement. And they do give Jordan Mailata 3 years, $66 million. So they at least get one piece back on that vaunted O-line, but I'm sure, you know, a lot of questions are going to be had on how does that Philly O-line now look as they go into some transition.
I think Philly's going to be really good. They didn't lose their line coach, and he's the key to the glue. Yeah. He's the glue that holds it all together. You know, and look, Mulata's the guy they drafted in the seventh round, and the same draft they draft Dillard in the first round. And, you know, they hit. And that's why all these people that grade drafts, I mean, when you get somebody, you know, you get somebody in the seventh round or as a college free agent that fills the void of somebody you picked in the first, that's a great draft. You know, that's a great, great draft. So for me, it makes sense. I mean, this is a really good player, and they have the best, one of the best line coaches in football. When you have that as a personnel guy, that's utopia.
And it's wild. They opened the year in Brazil. Our producer, Elliot Bowman's looking up flight options for us in Sao Paulo. I want to go. I want to go with my dad. As you know, we're Packer, you know, being from Wisconsin. A lot of cheeseheads. You know, the Brazilians love the Packers, Michael, even though you wouldn't think necessarily with
how,
you know,
is that? Where did that come from? The legacy of winning? Is that what happened?
I think so. You know, it's all like Hawaiians love the Steelers. You know, it's just, I don't know, one of those weird things. I can't explain it. I just know that the Packers have this really odd. People around the globe just connect to Green Bay in this weird, really weird way.
It.
I mean, it's part all the success that they've had. But yeah, that'll be that's the first ever game, not only in Brazil, but it's also a season opener, and it's on a Friday, which I can't really wrap my head around. But I would love to go.
I love that it's on a Friday. I mean, is that Labor Day weekend too, or no? Is it the weekend after?
Weekend after. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, Thursday, Friday. I mean, then we get a game on Sunday, Monday. I mean, is there anything better than that? We get college games on Saturday. Look, I mean, look, the women's basketball tournament outranked the men's in ratings, which was incredible, which is great for sports. I love that. You know, Al Davis would have been so happy to know that. But to me, this football is remarkable, how they just continue to dominate, and they're going to take every single day of the week. I love it.
I'm just glad, you know, because usually like those Thursday Fridays, especially going into college football, you're stuck watching, like, only because it's early in the football season. You're like, you know what, I'm going to get fired up about Jacksonville State versus Middle Tennessee on some cable channel that I have to go into like the 400s to find on a Friday night. No, instead you get to watch Packers Eagles. You kind of feel like, and I'm sure Eagles fans are, I'm sure on the one hand it's like, oh great, we play in Brazil, but you know, to take away, and that's a home game for Philly, to take away a home game at the Link. Like, for a team that already has a lot of question marks around it, I mean, that's I kind of feel like I'm getting the shaft there if I'm a Philly fan.
But you wonder why the cap goes up as much as it does? See, people complain about this. But this money that they're making going overseas, wait till we start playing more in Germany. Wait till there's a team in Germany or a team. I mean, this is just – and the players share in this. So on one hand, it hurts the fans. But on the other hand, it really expands the game. And that's what has to happen.
Money
and
talks.
This is – Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I was Packers were the last team who went overseas, and they played in London and then lost as an 8-point favorite outright to the Giants. And as a Packer fan, I'm like, I never want to see the Packers play an international game ever again. And now here I am like a year and a half later, and I'm all in. I'm like, this is awesome. Sign me up. Packer takeover in Sao Paulo. So, you know, your perception.
I'm excited for it. I mean, two good young quarterbacks, you know, 100%. Jordan Love. I think the Packers are going to be better defensively this year with Halfley. You know, I have a lot of high hopes because you got Josh Jacobs. Philadelphia has changed their team completely with Saquon Barkley coming in. I mean, I'm excited for it. And both quarterbacks, you know, Hurts is going to have to take a giant step. See, Hurts is such an interesting guy because when he came in there, he was connected to the team. Last year, there wasn't a connection to Hurts and the team. That's got to change for them to get back.
No question. Kent, we will have a lot to talk about that as we continue as well, that Packer-Eagle week one matchup. One quick contract thing to hit before we get out of here that has kind of changed since the news broke with the Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans deal. So the Texans added 4 void years to his deal, and they moved some guarantee money into this year's contract. So basically, he's got like a 1-year, $22.5 million deal. Could be a free agent in 2025. Can you just explain the thought process, at least from your perspective, why they would do that there in Houston?
Well, I think they made it really clear that they know that he's probably not a long-term solution to any of their issues. So, of course, Bella's going to make sure she's a part of this.
Bella loves Steph Diggs, obviously.
Oh, obviously. Clearly she does. But anyway, I think to me, Nick knows that he's not the long-term solution. And to enter into a long-term deal and have cap money carrying forward with him isn't a smart move. So it's a one-year thing, plus they get to evaluate him.
Makes sense. I get why they would do it. I mean, especially with some of the struggles he had toward the end of the of his tenure up there in Buffalo. So I'm glad we could get your thoughts on that. Again, we'll have another episode coming up on Monday. I just, you know, we've got all the screens on here as we're doing the episode. The breaking news is we're literally recording, Michael. The O.J. Simpson, 74 years old, has passed away from apparently a battle with cancer. So that was not something I think anybody had on our radars, but O.J. Simpson passes away.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson passed away. It's interesting how the Hall of Fame continues to keep him in there based on the off the field. You know, I know he was proved innocent, but not in the civil court. Same thing with George Preston Marshall, which I wrote about in Football Done Right. I think to me, sometimes these Hall of Fames, it's not like the Supreme Court. You don't get a lifetime guarantee to stay in there.
Yeah, no, said it well. I wouldn't have anything else to add. But yeah, O.J., that's, again, I don't think anybody was had even, you know, had him on the radar, but passes away at 74 due to a cancer diagnosis. And that's all I've got for today. Well, again, we have another episode on Monday here, Michael. We'll have more draft talk. I'm sure there will be more, some more contract stuff coming out, more news as there always is around the league since it is a 365-day adventure here, the National Football League. But always a blast being with you, sir. I'll be with you Sunday here on the Lombardi Line on the air, so stay tuned for that.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Ben. Thanks for fitting in.
Hey, Femi, absolutely.
Have another cocktail on up.
Another one, yes. Pina colada. I feel like that's Femi's drink. That's just my hunch, but I've drinking with Femi a couple times.
I think you're right.
I think I am right on that. Sneakily am. All right, for Michael, I'm Ben. We'll catch you next time right here on the GM Shuffle.